Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome to the Escape Pod. I'm Jo Pryor, and together with Mark Adams, today we're going to take you on a seafaring recreational travel nostalgic cruise aboard the QE2, the Queen Mary 2, and perhaps even British Airways. Good afternoon.
I think I might need to get my sea legs for all that.
I think you could. We've got a great show lined up. Mark, how's your week been?
It's been great. Thank you for asking. It's been a very standard week of work and nothing special, but I'm planning my trip for Bali for New Year's, so I'm very excited about that. We're going to have to rustle up some either guests or some special commentators to tell us what to do in Bali over the New Year period. I'm very excited. It's been a while since I've been overseas, so...
And you've not only started thinking about it, but you've started saving for it. I love your saving strategy. Tell everybody what you're doing.
I pay with everything with a note, and then I take my change, and then I put it in a container, and then I bank it, and that goes in a savings-only account for spending.
I think that's gorgeous.
Yeah, I've already got myself an extra $300 just sitting there waiting to go. So the first $300 I spend in Bali are going to be free money as far as I'm concerned.
And you're there for a week?
There for a week. So that should get me through a couple of days, actually.
Oh, indeed. Probably
considering I pay for the
days.
Rest of it. Already,
yeah, no, so. that's terrific. That'll I think, get you through more than it will get me through Africa.
Yeah, well, it depends where in Africa and how you... Africa's just one of those amazingly diverse, phenomenal, huge continents with incredible spikes of wealth and poverty. So you can do Sun City.
I could, but I'm down south, and I've just paid for my airfares this week, and also the train fare on the Blue Train, which was a little bit more than the $300, I have to confess. And this is to take a train journey from Pretoria to Cape Town. So it's actually only an overnight journey. So it's two days and one night.
Oh, beautiful. I've not been to that part of the world. We're dying to hear. And are you going to use one of our guest suggestions and have an online photo journal or then produce a coffee table book?
I'm thinking about it, although I'm not sure how I'm going to do it's called a selfie, isn't it, when you take a photograph of yourself when I'm in the bubble bath smoking a cigar, drinking a martini. That is my ideal.
Are you talking
ideal.
About tonight?
I'm talking about the Blue Train. So I get to actually be in a bathtub.
On the train.
On the train. That is one of the key things about this train.
I did not know that. I hope they've got some well-laid rails in that part of Africa, because otherwise you're going to be splooshing and...
This is luxury travel.
This is very luxury travel to have a bath on a train. So the Blue Star is quite a phenomenal achievement for...
For little old Joe. Yes, absolutely.
For all of us. For humankind. Being able to bathe on the run, on the roll.
On the roll. Now, speaking of Blue Stars... We have a top star guest.
Yes, we do. Today. We've got an intriguing guest today.
We do. We've got Dawn Cleary in the studio. Now, Dawn is a hospitality management consultant, but she has had fascinating times as a crew member on board both the QE2 and British Airways, mm-hmm. and has recently travelled on the Queen Mary 2. Mm-hmm. So she's definitely a Cunard girl.
And she's certainly got her sea legs.
She does indeed. Dawn, welcome to the Escape Pod.
Hello, Jeremiah. It's great to be here.
Thank you for coming.
So tell us... How did you get onto the QE2 as crew?
Well, originally I was working for Cunard Hotels, which was based in central London in Hammersmith. And it was a pure fluke, really, Joe. I was part of the reception management team there. And I was in a position where I did the daily postal mail for one of the chief accountants of all three ships, which in those days was the Cunard Countess, the Cunard Princess, and the QE2, which was the flagship. And after, I think, about 6 months of handing his post over to him every morning, he actually said to me, "I really see you on the QE2. And that was, you know, to me, it was quite a great shock, because I was working in a hotel which was very ship-orientated anyway. The bars were ship, the restaurants restaurant was in the design of the ship. Even some of the rooms had portholes. And he eventually pursued me so much to say, look, I really would like to put you forward for an interview with Cunard down in Southampton. Would you go if I got you an interview? And at the time I was only 19, and I thought, well, why not? Let's go for it. And I went down to Southampton, and duly went for the interview, and was interviewed for approximately, I think, about 15 minutes. And in those days, there was no computerisation. The gentleman who interviewed me was a gentleman called John Crabb, who was, in those days, personnel officer. There was no such word as HR. And he interviewed me and looked at me under his gold-rimmed spectacles and said, well, thank you very much, Miss Kendrick, for coming to see us. We'll be in touch. And he put my name in a big red book, and with a position that I was applying for, which was actually a Huey 2 stewardess. And he closed the book and said, OK, we'll be in touch. So in my naivety, I said to him, well, OK, do I go back and give my resignation? He said, not unless you don't want a job for 3 years.
And I said, my goodness, there was a three-year waiting list.
There was a three-year waiting list, and I was absolutely devastated. So I had quite a bad day that day, actually, because I'd actually applied for a position with British Airways at the time as cabin crew at the same time, because this is where I saw myself, actually going from working from a hotel side into a flight attendant. I'd always wanted to be a flight attendant from being at school. So I got back on the train to Southampton. The train boat broke down. So I was in a siding in Southampton for about an hour to 2 hours waiting, for the train to move forward back to central London. Got home to my apartment. My goldfish had died.
Oh, goodness. That's not a good omen.
And I opened an envelope for British Airways to say that at this stage I'd been unsuccessful. So I was pretty much in the doldrums. And, I then approached the financial advisor the next day and actually said to him, look, yes, I have been accepted, I think, by Cunard, but it is going to be a three-year wait. And he said, leave it with me. So I and Julie left it with him. And to put a long story short, I was in Norway within 11 days.
My goodness. On the QE2. Talk about it's not what you know, but who you know.
Yes, absolutely. In those days it was. Yes, yes. So, my first trip on the QE2 was the Norwegian fjords to Tromsø. I think we went to Oslo, Tromsø and Stavanger. So that was my first experience on the QE2, a Norwegian fjord cruise, yes.
So how did you know that you wanted and or needed to travel?
I'd always wanted to travel from being a small child, and I went to a hotel and tourism college in Derbyshire, where I'm actually from originally. I was actually at the college at the same time, but didn't know it, at the same time as Paul Burrell, who was actually Princess Diana's private equerry.
Oh, yes,
time.
Of course, and, yes, putting our royalist hat on.
Yes, I think he was a year ahead of me, actually. He was leaving as I arrived, and stayed there for 3 months because I could see it was like a two-year drudge, really. I thought, well, where this is getting me, and I've always been sort of wanting to move things a little bit forward very quicker, and I did 3 months doing a hotel management diploma, and actually went home to my mother and said, look, I really think I need to do a fast track on this. Can you put me in a private college in Bournemouth? And she said, absolutely not. You're an only child. You've got to stay around. And I said, so then, of course, as an only daughter, I went to my father and explained it to him. And he said, oh, I don't know about this. Anyway, I got there, went to Bournemouth and did the course a lot quicker. It was a private college. I did the course in hotel management a lot quicker. And part of the course was actually not just the theory. It was actually going into operational management. So I was actually sent to work for a hotel company in central London from there. So that's where London came into it.
And tell everybody, is the hotel, the Cunard Hotel, is it still in Hammersmith?
I think it is, yes. I think the Cunard Hotel is still there. It was a very ugly building, actually.
Because I was in Hammersmith recently.
Yes.
At the River Cafe. Mm. And I don't remember seeing
it might,
a Cunard Hotel.
I think, actually, the Cunard Hotel is still there, the building, but it's now actually been bought out by Novotel.
Ah,
so
okay.
I think it's now called the Novotel Hammersmith. But it was very, very modern in its time. And it had the Mauritania restaurant and the Lusitania restaurant. So it was very much on the Cunard parody, really, yes.
Excellent. In terms of your time on the QE2, were you aware that it was such a legend in the making? when you were working on the QE2?
No, not at all. No, no. I mean, you know, to actually say to people, I'm working on the QE2 when I came home, of course, you know, to them it was a very prestigious esteem thing, but to be actually on there, I don't think I really treasured it as much as I should have done. It was part of my life. It was a glamorous life. So it was very different to the day-to-day operation and being offshore.
And do you still feel that you're attached to the QE2?
Yes, very much.
It's more than just a job, isn't it?
It is, yes. There was a travel journalist who called Alan Wicker, who recently passed away, and he was he did a documentary called Wicker's World, and he actually came on board to do a trip on the QE2 filming. And he actually explained it very, very well, actually, in a few words, by actually saying, you do become a breed of your own.
Right. Oh, so is that it, that you identify with other people because of the unusual circumstances?
I think so, yes.
So it's like a floating Stockholm syndrome.
Yes. It's a connection that you have and you don't lose it.
With linen tablecloths.
Yes.
And that's obviously what we perceive it is like from a passenger's perspective. Mm. But what is it like from a crew member's journey actually working on board?
Because you must be cheek to jowl.
You are. I mean, the QE2 had, the time I was on there, we would travel there was one crew member to, I'll get that right. There was three crew members to one passenger.
My goodness.
So that's how they worked the criteria out.
3-1 in that ratio?
Yes, in that ratio.
Wow.
And, you know, there was transatlantic travel and there was first class travel. So, you know, everybody could mingle and mix, but it was known as transatlantic. You were either a transatlantic passenger or a first class passenger when I was on there.
So what was the vast difference between the two? What were the main differences, I should say?
Well, on the times that I worked on there, I was working with crew that had actually been, with Cunard a lot longer than myself. And they actually were saying, you know, days gone by, you couldn't, you know, a first-class passenger didn't mix with a transatlantic passenger. They were all on the transatlantic cruise, but they couldn't go into certain areas. So, of course, by the time I was on there in the 1980s, you know, first-class passengers were mingling with... You know, somebody from, you know, it was very quite interesting actually on the what we used to call the Limey cruise, which was the Mediterranean cruise to Madeira, Casablanca, and around there. That would be called a Limey cruise. And the reason it was called that is because a lot of Liverpoolians and Mancunians would come on board because it was actually the government time to have a council holiday. So they would all come on board. So you would get first class passengers mixing. And I think I did detect, you know, at that time, it wasn't part of what the first class passengers were looking to be part of. So how times changed, you know, how times would change.
That must be awful for them to be forced to cruise with the great unwashed.
Yes. But how times changed, you see, from the 1920s, 30s, that wouldn't have been allowed.
Absolutely.
Back
amazing
to the
talent.
QE2. And our amazing in-studio talent.
I'm talking about our current guest.
So you've described to us that there was the first class and the transatlantic passengers. What are some of the most memorable experiences that you had with those passengers and perhaps even with crew while you were on the QE2?
Okay, where should we start? Okay, memorable experiences, I think, with the passengers we'll start with. I think it's, as we get older, we try and compare what psychologically makes people. And I think some of the nicest people I actually met on the QE2 were probably the ones that had to work harder to actually achieve their cruise or their visit.
So they'd had one of Mark's saving plans.
Yeah, possibly so. Yes. I think so. They were more, you know, I was talking about earlier about, I don't want to go on too much about the Limey cruise, but they were some of the most nicest people.
But people from the North England area tend to be very engaging, warm people.
Yes, and as you've got to remember, lovely culture. My time, I'd just come from that area. You know, I was born in between Stockport and Cheshire. I was born, you know, in Cheshire and I came from a farming community in Derbyshire.
Cat farming? Cheshire cat farming?
No, not Cheshire cat farming. Oh. No, it was actually dairy cows.
I was going to say cheese. Cheshire cheese, Mark.
But no, I think, you know, the camaraderie of those people, they know how to enjoy themselves. They very much enjoyed the experience.
So the time that you're talking was kind of in the 80s,
yes.
early 90s?
Yes, very early 80s.
Okay.
Yes.
So in that period, there in the UK, there was still a reasonable class structure that was much more present than it is today.
Yes, much more present than
it
is today.
And sort of the 80s with people coming in and able to earn a lot of money and sort of what happened during that period changed the class structure. So that social change also affected the change of how people perceive their position on the vessels going forward. So you had a lot more mixing.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that led to a lot more people being in a lot more forms of contact with a lot other people.
Yes, but I think you still had that diversification.
Yep.
I think so.
Yep.
You know, you would see the people from the north of England, you know, possibly take over a public area much more. You know, they were very strong. They paid a lot of money to come on board. They were buying
the most
champagne
of it.
Was flowing. You know, they'd saved for a long time. There were crowds and crowds of people, and they were making lots of friends while they were on there. So,
and enthusiastic partakers in alcoholic beverages.
Very, very.
A lot of enthusiasts.
Very many, many means. And they weren't
with
drinking
highly
pints
skills.
Of beer. They were drinking, you know, bottles of Bollinger and
good
Moët
on them.
And Verve. Yes, so it was an experience. And I think it's lovely to see that generation do that.
So there's one thing about being on the vessels and cruising and getting from A to B and the QE2, but it also went to places and stayed in places. What were the major places that people wanted to go for? What was iconic of the QE2?
Oh, I think iconic, everybody wanted to do a New York transatlantic. I think that was the main, the preconceived idea of transatlantic is there very much. And I think very few people you would meet that didn't enjoy the experience.
Right.
You know, it's everything more.
And what time of the day does it come into New York Harbour?
Well, in the 80s, it used to come in at 7 to 7.30 in the morning, sometimes early, depending on the swell on the sea, if we'd had a fast trip, and also depending on the captain.
Mm.
You know, the captains sail the QE2 very differently. You know,
how is that?
Well, some captains are very leisurely. You know, they want to get in at a certain time, and they'll arrange with the guys in New York to be there to meet them. And some of the captains, you know, are very much regimental. You know, that's the fixed time they need to be there, and they want to be in at that time. Because it costs money to be in. You
of
know,
course.
It costs time and money to be in. But I used to be in there at 7.30 in the morning. I'd probably be on 34th Street myself having coffee by 9 o'clock because I was very much in a position where I could leave the ship. I didn't have to clean cabins.
Right.
I had a position.
What was your
position? I was a stewardess. I was one of the stewardesses to the captain, and there was four of us. And, yes, we used to take it in turns at who would stay on and who would, you know, if we had any dignitaries coming on board, we would take it in turns on who would stay behind and do a New York day. And next time, you know, wherever we were travelling to from then, we'd compensate that person by staying on board. So it was a good arrangement. But the four girls that worked in this arrangement, we would look after the first officers and the captain. But when they weren't needing us, because they're not having parties every day, we would work either in the transatlantic room or we'd work in the first class room. And we'd split that between us as well.
And I guess some people wouldn't be aware, but the crew actually had three of their own bars on board the QE2. And, of course, the first officer and the captain had their own bar as well, which they would at times open.
A fourth bar?
Well, it was the first officer's bar, and that could be open by invitation to guests, to passengers.
Okay, so like on the Love Boat when you got to have captain's dinner.
Nothing like the Love Boat.
Nothing like the Love Boat, Mark. Sorry.
No, nothing.
Much more classy.
So what were the crew bars like?
Well, the crew bars have got a pseudonym name called the Pig. I don't know. I need to find out
the
why.
Pig and Whistle.
Maybe that's it. But they're all called Are You Going to the Pig? That was everybody, you know.
Okay.
And on board, there was actually four bars. There were four crew bars because the QE2 had 1,000 crew. So, you know, they had different types of bars.
So there's 1,000 crew and what about 300 passengers then?
Oh, no. Many more.
Okay.
Many more. Yes. So there was three main bars, and there was a fourth bar as well, which was a disco bar, and that was called the Castaway Bar.
And so this is just for the crew?
This is just for the crew, and this was on foredeck. yeah. Fore deck aft, and there was also on sick deck.
And so what were the rest of the accommodations like? I guess it depended on your role.
Well, it depended on your role. I was actually on 5 deck aft, so I still got a porthole. But if you, my
is that an indicative experience?
Yes, to have a porthole, saying you've got nice. I was in a cabin that could have been a passenger cabin, which I shared with 2 other girls.
Right.
So there's 3 of us in the one cabin.
So the people without portholes, they're probably lower down on the.
Yes, if you were living on 6 deck, that you would probably be a chef or a baker or
one of the trades.
Laundry, yes, the trades. There would 6 deck was mainly for crew. Yes,
front of house.
I actually was privileged to have the 5 deck. So
oh, right.
As I walked out of my cabin, within 3 minutes, I would be. With passengers.
Yeah.
Or probably less than that. So we always had to wear the right attire.
Right. And Mrs. Yes. Padmore was downstairs in the dark.
That's right. And something like that.
And what was crew attire for you as stewardess to the captain?
Okay. A white blouse, a tartan skirt, and a long blouse for the winter, and a short sleeve blouse for the summer, and a tartan skirt. Yes. So
was the tartan skirt pleated or was it?
Tartan pleats for the day, short tartan pleats for the day, and long evening skirt for the evening. Yes, long skirt for the evening.
Also
so if anybody
tartan.
Remembers, is any of your listeners from the UK, it's sort of similar to the British Caledonian
right.
uniform of British Caledonian Airways years ago, yes. So they were the blue, we were the red. So we were the
so
steward.
So give us some gossip. Tell us some things that are going to curl our hair.
Okay, well, I have to be careful what I say here.
No, you don't.
not at all.
Go for it.
Okay. Dowager New Yorker ladies coming on board. Mm-hmm. Looking
with
for
the poor boy?
No, coming on board alone. Yes, coming
and
on board
sort of
alone.
And what sort of age would a dowager be?
Probably
ready?
Anything from 50 up to 80.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, very much always come on board alone. Don't have any, lots of luggage. And lots of, but no emotional baggage. They come on with their money, with their jewels, and looking for fun. And most of them would probably have a penthouse up on the what was called the Q deck then, the Queen deck.
Mm.
And it was. They just used to love having the parties, and they would love to host a crew party in their penthouse.
Oh wow!
Yes.
So what
yes.
what kind of preparations would go into hosting a crew party?
Oh well, lots of alcoholic beverages.
lots of enthusiasts, as Mark likes to call them.
Lots of enthusiasts, yes. And but it was a privilege. It was a privileged set that did that. You became, as I was. I mean, I was on there for 3 years. As my time got longer and longer, then you would get invites to these. They're not going to invite a new blood in straight away. Mm. So yes, it's all a time. It's all a timing matter.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm guessing that these are the people that dress for dinner, and these are the people who have pretty big expense accounts on the
huge
boats.
Huge expense accounts.
They can get catering in.
Yes, probably people that are connected with, there was a lady that was very connected with Marlborough Cigarettes.
Right.
The heiress of Marlborough Cigarettes used
right.
to come on board.
Right.
Lots of dress designers would be.
So quite a social world.
Quite a social world, yes. But moneyed people.
Well, absolutely.
They've been travelling for many, many years. Though, we had a lady who lived on board with
Cunard.
Really? She lived on board. And I wouldn't see her that often. The ship was a very, very big ship. But when the QE2 finished... back in 2000, I think it was 2002, the QE2 finished.
Mm.
It might have been later than 2008. Yes. She was actually on British television saying, she was going to have to move...
To the Queen Mary too?
To the Queen Mary. And since then, I've actually since been on the Queen Mary and actually asked to speak to this lady because I wanted to say to her, I was an ex-Cunarder. But she'd gone. She didn't like it.
Oh.
So she's now gone on to one of the smaller ships. She's gone on to the Queen Victoria. So,
isn't that fascinating? We'll just hold that thought. We've got a...
Yes. Well, everybody looks around their small Melbourne apartment and considers what it would be like if it was floating. We might go to a short break. Got something to tell us about an establishment called the Anchor Bar.
Well, the Anchor Bar had been there many, many years. It was actually run by an Italian family, and it was the first port of call for all of the crew when they got off the ship.
New York?
Yes, this was in New York. And yes, right as we came into our hold, the Anchor Bar was there ready, waiting for us. So the doors would open at 7 in the morning.
Oh, how divine.
It was all there from, Bloody Mary's onwards. It was just fantastic. But I just want to put a brief mention to the Anchor Bar because... a friend and I that worked on the QE2 together actually took a reunion trip back to New York to do the final transatlantic on the QE2 in 2008. And we went to our original, haunts, and then we just said, oh, well, let's walk down to the quayside and let's just have a look in the anchor bar. And it was just absolutely devastating because it's now a car lot.
Oh, no, and, they put up a car lot. That's a Joni Mitchell song, isn't it?
Mm. Yes, it's all been knocked down, and we reminisced, and we stood outside, and we just thought, this is like another world. We can't believe, that we'd experienced all those years, 5 years of going in there for Bloody Marys and nearly missing the ship and getting the last call. And there was actually a link between the ship and the anchor bar so that we knew when was the final boarding time of getting on. Oh. And, they had this connection happening where they clear the bar and say, guys, if you don't go now, you're not going to get on board, because there was a huge thoroughfare to cross to get across to the QE2 from the bar. So yes, we staggered across every so often. It was quite it, but to actually go there and see that it's all now a car lot was a bit devastating.
Yeah,
time's moved on.
How emotional was it for you then to be on the last transatlantic voyage in 2008?
It was one of the experiences I'll never forget in my life, and I was very lucky to do it with two crew members that I worked on board with in the 1980s. And the Queen Mary, which I've recently cruised on, actually took the trip with the QE2, and the experience of travelling, from New York Harbour, where the Queen Mary actually met us at Battery Park. The Queen Mary actually didn't come into the hold where the QE2 was, into the docks. She was actually waiting for us to come down the Hudson. And it was just a fantastic experience as we got to, the Statue of Liberty, and the fireboats came out and did the red, white and blue, fountains. It was a really fantastic experience, yes.
The helicopters buzzing
the
about
helicopters
over top.
The helicopters were buzzing, yes.
And what was the feeling of the other crew then? I mean, the crew who was still working. What were they saying while you were on this last voyage?
I think, Joe, what you've got to remember is when I was on board the QE2 for Cunard, it was all British crew, mainly, the officers were British crew, with Filipinos, Malaysians working with us. But now, primarily now, even the officers are, we do have Asian crew on there now. Wow. And it's a totally different experience. So, of course, when we were on board, As passengers from the QE2, we were having reminiscing and actually talking to crew members that were looking after us, and they couldn't believe how it used to be and how it was now, because even when the QE2 actually finally came to an end, the whole crew experience had changed. Tremendously so. Mm.
So if the crew experience has changed, and you said that you've just recently been on the Queen Mary.
Yes.
How has the passenger experience changed from cruising?
The passenger experience has changed for the better, I believe. It was nice. The Queen Mary, has got very much an Art Deco feel. It's very luxurious. It's very elegant. But the actual passengers have also changed very much now. We're getting a younger clientele of passengers that are coming now.
So you're saying you've got people who are under 60? Or?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Very much so, yes. Very much so.
And so people also in their late 50s?
Yes, and even late 30s onwards, people are coming. It's very different.
But it's not a family.
No, I wouldn't say. I saw a few families on there this time, but it's not a huge family thing. It's very much, reunion parties. I saw quite a few on there.
Oh, okay.
People's 30th, 40th birthday, wedding anniversaries. But the clientele are a lot younger, and the gay experience now is a lot. I mean, I can't remember them being a lot of gay passengers on board when I was on there. There was a few.
When you were crewing.
Mainly it was gay crew. Mm. That was the form. That
in the musical theatre.
In the musical theatre, in the waiting, in the stewardessing. Not so much in the kitchens, but, valets and waiters and, BR stewards, bedroom stewards, cabin stewards. Very much that
Roger
was where
the cabin boy.
Roger the cabin boy. And Twinkle, poor Twinkle, has passed away now. But all of these people with these wonderful fictitious names, that you knew them as these names,
Yeah.
But it's all changed now, The camaraderie of the Queen Mary is very much different now. It's open to lots of different characters now. It's not. I feel when I was on board, I didn't see it as much, but I would have think looking in as a passenger, it would be quite austere. it would be still very much that.
But everything was. I mean, you look at air travel, and that used to be a very different. You weren't in a flying entertainment tube like you are now, complaining about the quality of the corked wine that's being served. Or now, travellers are very, very different things, and the expectations were different, and what people looked for in travel were very different. But then again, things with technology, mobile phones, computers, instant communications has all changed. How did you get letters and so forth back? How did you get communicated with?
Well, in New York, I would get to New York and there'd be mail waiting for me. I'd get to Africa, there'd be mail. You know, we had what we called a PO, a crew list of where our itinerary was going, and there would be PO boxes to write to.
So
those PO boxes would then be dispatched to the ship. Yeah, so it's quite exciting.
And then you book trunk calls and...
Yes, we did. I didn't very often, I must admit.
From the ship.
I was quite aloof with my life.
Well, I think this is a great way to be at sea.
And with modern cruising, though, surely one of the other things that's changed, if you're seeing a different demographic, it has to then be the accessibility, the cost factor. How has that changed? I mean, your recent trip on the Queen Mary, what was your itinerary and what was your approximate
cost? Well, I did a five-day trip with a ex-crew member again, with one of the girls that I went to New York with. And, she rang me up and she said to me, you know, I know you're only in the UK for 7 weeks. Shall we do a trip on the Queen Mary? You've not been on it yet. And I said, oh, that'd be lovely. Anyway, she came back to me and said, look, I found us a cabin, a porthole, for £1,000. It's £1,000. For you and I to go for 5 days. And I said, look, I think that's a little bit...
£1,000 each?
Yes. I said, I think that's a little bit ridiculous. I said, I don't think this time, maybe next, because it was one of the few cabins left, you see. And it was only what we would call a English Channel cruise. It was from Southampton to Guernsey in the Channel Islands, which was a reminisce port for me, because I'd actually managed a hotel there years ago. So I was quite keen to do that. And then we went off to Blankenburg in Belgium. So it was a five-day trip. But then she came back to me, pure fluke, within 24 hours and said to me on the phone, the answer, you've got to give me the answer now, yes or no. And I said, why? And she said, I've managed to get a cabin for £450 each. And I said, let's take it.
450 squids. That's not a lot of money.
We didn't have a porthole, but we weren't worried. We weren't worried at all, because you don't spend a lot of time
for a few nights
in the cabin.
I think if longer cruises, you'd want to enjoy the cabin more.
Yes.
Shorter
probably,
cruises, you're
yes, but
too
I'm not a great cabin
around.
Girl anyway. I get up and about and I'm out meeting people. I'm a social person. So cabin's not so important to me as a hotel room isn't really. You know, you're out there and experiencing. But no, it was a fantastic experience. And I got, so I stayed on a five-deck cabin for £450, had a great little girl who was our valet, who you can pay additional extras to for, you know, dry cleaning and doing the extra toiletries and things like that. And and then I ended up in that same trip going in the a penthouse cabin, you know, where somebody was paying £15,000. I think £14,000 for the 5 days.
Right.
So totally different, you know. He got a great view and his own balcony.
I was going to say that.
I would hope so. And a full-time valet.
But, yes, he had a full-time
and
balcony.
And he has a full-time saving plan as well.
Yes, he does.
He wasn't doing it with coins.
No. He was putting his £50 notes away.
Bonus checks. Not just stuff from behind the sofa cushions that I'm doing for my Bali trip.
Probably has a different kind of sofa.
I'm sure I can afford head braiding. It's 18 minutes to 3 on Joy 94.9. If you'd like to become a member and pay for this fracas that we call a radio show, join us. Call us up, 1300-JOY-949. Speak to the lovely Keith, who's sitting there with his pen all a-quiver, waiting to take down your details. If you're a family, you can join us for $96. If you're interested in becoming a full member, it's $72 for an individual or $36 concession. If you're under 18, it's only $22. If you're a business, $165. We'd love to have more members to keep Joy on the air. We are free to air, but it's not free to go to air. So although we're all volunteers, we would very much so appreciate either your donation or your membership. You can also volunteer with Joy. So have a look on the website. We've got plenty of different things to do, including the Taste of Radio course, and you can become an on-air or a support worker. There are plenty of different opportunities for your volunteering. We'd love to hear from you. Joy 94.9.
Dawn, you've spoken a lot about your time on the QE2, but what are the other places in the world that you've liked to travel to, and where do you go to get some vacation time?
Where do I go? Well, I think probably my most travelled place that I have been to is Bali in Indonesia, so I'll be able to give some marks some tips there. But I think it's time now for me to sort of start doing some changes on that. I've actually been to Bali 9 times.
My goodness, that's a bit of a record.
I used to actually travel to Bali from England.
Really?
So I really, really enjoyed
the experience.
So what was the
allure that would bring you all the way from the UK to Bali?
I think I just like the ambience of the place and, you know, the people. And yes, just the calmness of it. So I had quite
and the gamelan.
Yes, the
dung,
gamelan.
Dung,
the, just the whole
it's great music.
Charm of it, really, at the time. And I had a very, very busy job at the time in the UK. So it was, as soon as you stepped off the plane in Bali, it was complete calmness and relaxation, which is still there today. But obviously, very much changed as when I used to go sort of in the 90s. But where one of the places I've really, really enjoyed the experience of is Africa. I think Africa.
So north
or
south?
South Africa and East Africa. Mm. East Africa, you know, to Tsavo National Park and seeing the experience of getting up and, you know, the lions and the elephants at the Salt Lake, you know, lakes very, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning. That's a wonderful thing to do.
And the feeling of Africa is really unusual. It does feel like the cradle of civilization. It feels like Mother Africa. You feel like it's this strange feeling like you've gone home to where people come from. It's so fantastic.
I could be homeward bound in December.
Homeward bound to Africa, where ancestors have originally come from.
Yes, and Jo will experience this when she's on this beautiful, you know, the blue train. The experience, you know, it is very going back to base, really, going back to earth. It's a wonderful experience. Mm. Yes,
that's awesome.
And fantastic service. It's amazing, actually. You know, some of these guys haven't been hotelier sommelier trained in some of the hotels out there, but the service is phenomenal. Yeah, so it just says they don't have to all have to go to hotel management training college worldwide. You know, they're taught and they give you an wonderful hospitality experience.
And so is that your next trip is to Africa?
No, my next trip actually is a couple of weeks to Sydney.
Excellent.
So that's not too far. Yep. And then I'm going back to the UK in January. I'll be back in the UK in January. And then I'll probably just drop over to Paris. Because Paris is a fantastic experience for me, yes. Yes, always have great experiences in Paris. And, you know, I think talking here on a travel show, I think you've got to be very open. I'm not a great planner. I don't plan my day. I'm not an itinerary girl. You know, I get up and go. And I think those are some of the best experiences and you meet the best, you know, opportunities and people doing that.
So how long will you spend in January in the UK?
Probably about 7 weeks. Yes,
oh, that's
seven
a fairly
weeks.
Decent stint.
Yes, yes.
You'll need your fur coat. It'll be cold.
I will. I'll take my fur coat.
So speaking of travel, and you've just said that you're not an itinerary person. You like to do things impulsively. Mm. What other tips do you have for people when they travel? Or do you have any etiquette tips, particularly if people are thinking about cruising doing recreational seafaring travel, as it is known, as opposed to cruising? What are some of the things that people need to be mindful of when they get on board?
I think, well, it's nice to just take the few casual cruising outfits, you know.
And so resort wear?
Yeah, resort wear, but combination clothing. So you're not, you know, I've always been a huge, my husband will, you know, he'll verify this, I've always travelled with a lot of luggage, but I'm getting to the point now, I'm getting older, a little bit older, and it's just not necessary. And I reduce very much going on the Queen Mary this time.
Is there still the level of formal dining and there used to be, people dressing for dinner on the cruise?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, this time I took a very small baggage with me on the Queen Mary, and I used 5E, I was there for 5 nights. And I used 5 evening dresses, and during the day, you know, I coordinated my, you know, culotte trousers and tops. So I didn't take a lot of day wear, easy to wear. But the evenings are still very much, you know, the black and white evening in the middle of the cruise is very much still there. Mm. So it's very, and anybody listening to this, thinking about doing a cruise for a celebration, or it's important to really take this evening wear, because I did see a few people there and you could see they were underdressed. And, you know, if you're going to start buying evening wear on board with the shops on board, it's a very expensive experience.
Well, absolutely. But even going to the best restaurants that I know of that I've been to in the last 5 years, I would say the casual dressing is very much, it's jeans with a nice shirt tucked in, even fancy trainers at some of the best hakkasan and restaurants like that. You don't find formal dressing in some of the most fine dining establishments anymore. So it's really quite a unique thing to think that people go on with the purpose on the cruise to spend the time dressing up, having their cocktail while they get ready, making their way slowly to the dining and making a real effort and scene out of it.
I think they go on to enjoy the experience. Mm. To enjoy the experience, you know, they don't encourage people to wear jeans on the Queen Mary in any place, you know, casual trousers. You don't have to wear a tie every evening to the restaurant, but it's encouraged.
And is that a peculiarly Cunard experience?
The dress code,
is that something that Cunard...
I think it's something that Cunard are now owned by Carnival Cruise Lines, and it's something that they've withheld. And if you don't want to wear the attire in the evening, there is another place called the, I think it was called...
Fish and Chip Shop out the back.
Pavilion, I think, restaurant you could go to, which it's very much a buffet restaurant, help yourself. So if you don't want... So they've got it very well, you know, displayed on the Queen Mary. You can either or. Mm. You can be casual or you can be formal.
Because they have a theatre and a cinema and a casino and... Mm. It's a floating city.
It's a floating city, and it's just much bigger than the QE2 was. And when I was on the QE2, I thought I was on a big liner. This is even bigger. To walk from the aft end to the forward end, if Joe was waving to me from the forward end and I was at the aft end, I wouldn't be able to see her.
My goodness. So what are the dimensions?
It actually took me 10 minutes. 10 whole minutes.
So it's like a kilometre.
It's a kilometre, yes, to walk. And then I would probably see the vision of Joe halfway waving.
Flailing away.
Yes, I'm here in the bar.
Joe doesn't flail.
But it's a totally different experience to the QE2. The Queen Mary is, it's more casual, but it's still got the echelons of dress.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.